Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. I want to welcome in studio the author of Cured, Handcrafted Charcuteria and More, Charles Wechselbaum. Welcome.
Thank you, Diane.
You're very welcome. He's here in the flesh.
Great to be here.
And we made it to Roberta's before the rain downpour began, but we're hearing thunder and lightning, so it's exciting. Anyway, I'm delighted to have met you at various places during the Fancy Food Show and have you in the studio. Your new book is beautiful.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
So anyway, first, can you give us a short summary of how you became, what is a person who cures called?
I don't think there's an official name for it. It's kind of
a curer. Okay.
Charcutier. Salumier.
Oh, okay. Salumier. That sounds
but
good.
It's really, you know, someone, I call myself someone who makes cured meats.
Okay.
There you go.
I was referring to you as the meat guy.
That too. That works.
Okay. So how did you pick meat as what you wanted to do?
How did I pick meat? It was a few years ago, I was kind of at an impasse in my life, and I had always been very interested in sort of the way you could take a piece of something that's so highly perishable as a piece of raw meat, mm-hmm. and by doing the opposite of freezing it or cooking it and leaving it in the zone where it's most prone to spoilage for long periods of time, you can mm-hmm. actually make it do the opposite of spoil. I always thought, you know, it was just kind
that
of
was a, cool.
It was cool. It was really cool. And then so it was like something that, you know, I'd sort of thought about my spare time, I guess, and then
kind of an interesting thing to think about in one's spare time.
We've all got our hobbies, you know, okay. our interests. But so about 6 or so years ago, I was sort of at an impasse and had to make a decision what to do next with my life. And I had been getting more and more interested in this type of food production, mm-hmm. and I just said, you know what, let's just do this thing and let's just turn it into a, you know, let me try to do this for my work,
uh-huh.
and let me try to make a business out of it, mm. and so that's what happened. And I was sort of captivated by the you know, a lot of the romance surrounding this type of production, you know, meats hanging for long periods of time and mm-hmm. kind of damp, humid environments.
I really shouldn't laugh because I hang around with cheesemakers. It's a similar damp environment.
It's the same kind of nerdery. I decided to go for it. And I did.
Okay.
But I also had an experience. I had gone to a couple of stores in New York, and this was like 2009, ish. Mm-hmm. And I would look on the shelf, the charcuterie where the salamis were sold, and I thought, like, wow, there's so many cheeses in this store, but there's like almost no salami. There was a couple of them.
That's true. It's really boomed, though. It really has boomed. It's following cheese.
It's crazy. In the last few years, it's changed a lot. But at that time, it was different.
It was needed. Okay.
So I thought that there was, you know, it helped my chances of potential success.
Right. Now, since this is a cheese show, I'm going to feel pretty comfortable asking really stupid questions.
That's okay.
About curing meat, or, you know, figuring some of my cheese-centric listeners share my low level of expertise. So I know you wanted to start your own business, but what did you consider on your way to meat? Did you consider cheese? Did you consider hardware, like your family?
Well, I definitely considered hardware. I definitely considered light bulbs.
light bulbs, did you?
Light bulbs, yeah.
Oh, okay. Like new ones, newfangled ones?
I knew a lot about light bulbs because that was something that I spent a lot of time buying and selling, actually, at my father's store.
Mm.
And so it was known, had a huge light bulb selection, selling all kinds of light bulbs.
Okay.
I was pretty lucky. You know, I had I just sort of, you know, when you have an aha moment, mm-hmm. and I was very lucky to have an aha moment during that period of time.
Okay.
And I thought about all kinds of different things, mm-hmm. but I felt like this is the one that really made the most sense, and would keep me on track, mm-hmm. for a few years, and mm-hmm. it's been a few years.
Okay. Now, for the book, I like to ask, how did the idea for the book come about? Did you pitch it, or did someone come to you?
I was, again, very lucky. I'd always loved writing. Writing is something I've always done in my spare time, and mm-hmm. I do a lot of writing in my mm-hmm. spare time. In this case, someone came to me.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a little stand in Madison Square Park mm-hmm. a couple times throughout the year, where they have these outdoor markets where they mm-hmm. set up a bunch of kiosks, and mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like a food market.
Right.
And so we set up a little panini stand with our little sandwich bar with mm-hmm. our salamis. We'd make paninis, and mm-hmm. It was fun. And one day I got an email from an editor at who said, "Hey, you know, I eat a lot of paninis from your stand, and I really like your paninis. I wonder if you could write a book about the stuff in between the bread, because we're looking to do a charcuterie book." And she said, "You know, I may be totally off centered on this, and if I am, forgive me." And I was...
Oh, you were delighted, I bet.
I was so happy.
What an opportunity.
It was an amazing opportunity.
That became your editor, or that became...
That became my editor.
Wow.
And I responded.
So you were discovered.
I guess.
At your sandwich stand.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, so I was very, very flattered that mm-hmm. She would ask you.
She would ask. Now, with food books, there's always a decision.
Yeah.
Is it going to be all recipes? So how did you decide what to include? What was your first idea, and did it stay the same, or did it evolve?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that the editor was really interested in doing something. I mean, it really wanted to, like, find, you know, where this book would fit in the sort of, in the context of all the other charcuterie books that are out there, because there's a lot of them now. And, you know, the question, how could we help this to stick out?
Right.
And so the idea came about to do a book that was charcuterie focused, but it was more like salt curing focused.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
to try to include something, you know, include, obviously make the focal point of the book meat, because that's
right.
kind of what I've come to know, but also include some non meat mm-hmm. curing recipes, and also include a section in the book that really helps the reader, teaches the reader how to cook and how to incorporate different types of cured meats
right.
into their daily cooking.
Now, those were my favorites, because I'm probably not going to start making sausage at home.
And that was the idea.
Loved the polenta recipe. Spanish tortilla recipe looks great. And it reminds me of actually my mother's way of making omelet. Really excited to try that one.
Thank you, Diane.
Yeah.
That was the exciting part of the book because, people cook every day, but not
right.
These people here in the United States don't necessarily eat salami every day. But there's so many ways that you could incorporate salami into your cooking.
Right.
I think it was sort of unknown. So that was part of the idea of the book.
And you can keep it around so that you can sprinkle it in for a little meat because now it's getting more fashionable to eat a little meat instead of all meat.
And that's the idea. You can buy a salami for what might seem like a lot of money in a store, but if you think about it over the course of 3 or 4 or 5 meals, you're not going to have to go out and buy a fresh piece of meat.
Right.
Then.
Okay. Now, who do you feel your audience is in terms of, I've done a book on 1 hour cheese, I've done the book on speed brewing. But I'm wondering who at home will persevere and with a cured meat recipe in terms of the money, the wait for it to be finished. Who do you think picks up the book and says, I'm going to make this?
Well, I think there's a lot of interest in curing foods these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think definitely the person who is interested in learning more about curing meats, especially, and who's willing to put time into it at home, but doesn't necessarily want to devote their whole life to it, looking for a side project.
Right.
So definitely like the meat enthusiast, the meat, the hobbyist, just the meat curious, because like I said, you can pick up the book just for the recipes.
Right.
And you don't have to go, you can, although I would love for all the readers of the book to use Charlito's Cocina salami in their recipes.
Right. Because what if they might stop buying your products because they become so good?
Well, I mean,
are you worried?
No, I'm not worried about that. No, there's enough water to float all of our boats.
Okay.
But one day you'll be able to buy our salami everywhere, but I know there's a lot of places where you can't buy it.
Right.
And a lot of parts of the country where you might find another kind of salami. So you could pick up the book up
for,
the recipes and sub out.
Throw it in and it's also interesting to learn how things are made, even if you're not planning on making them yourself.
Exactly. So, I mean, to answer your question, I think it's the meat curious, but it's also like just home cooks, the home cooking curious.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you imagine the home cook will become good at one recipe, or they'll try 10 of them?
Well, I hope that they try all of them. I think one of the things that I tried to do was offer a nice variety, offer recipes that could be done quickly for people who don't have a ton of time to do this. But also, there are some recipes in there that require some time and some preparation and some patience. And if somebody picks at least one recipe in there and becomes really good at it, I will be very flattered.
Okay.
And it'll be a good feeling. But if they pick 10, that'll be a nice feeling too.
Okay. Now, in your business, what are the hardest to make?
In our business?
Yeah. What at home is the hardest to make? Like, is there a big difference?
Well, I think that in our business, all of the dry cured salamis are the hardest to make. I mean, we happen to be in a very, very heavily regulated...
Is it the regulations?
It's from the regulations.
Okay.
So it's actually easier to make it at home than in the business.
Oh, because you don't have to...
deal with the
nobody's
government.
Nobody's coming to check you.
Exactly.
Okay. But, can you somewhat separate that out just from the actual creation rather than the testing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that... the salamis in the book are probably harder to make than some of the non-salamis, because the salamis require cutting of the meat, and also requires fermentation in addition to the drying processes. So there's a lot of, you know, there's sort of more margin for error with the salamis, because you have just more steps.
Okay.
And then more, more steps that are prone to a high number of variables.
And are you differentiating them with sausage or with the whole meat?
I'm differentiating them, yeah, with both. With a sausage that's meant to be cooked after you make it, and with a whole muscle that's just salted down essentially and hung to dry.
Right.
With a salami, you've got to basically make a sausage, but then ferment it and dry it.
Right.
So you're making something that, again, you're not cooking or anything, but it's meant. But by the time it's finished, it's meant to just be eaten as is.
Right. So, now, is that the recipe where you talk about mix it well enough so that the fat stays kind of solid? Now, what happens if you undermix, and what happens if you overmix in that case?
Well, if you undermix, you run the risk of the spices and the salt and the
just being too sporadic.
Yeah, not being evenly distributed.
Okay, so with taste, you could get a weird bite.
Exactly.
Or too spicy.
Or like in the drying, like for example, if the salt doesn't make it to, for the salami to cure properly, the salt, the meat needs to come into contact with the salt. So if you don't mix it well enough, maybe you have some meat that doesn't touch the salt, and it goes rancid, for example.
Okay.
Goes bad. So there's that. And then if you overmix it, you run the risk of...
does it turn it into pepperoni?
It could. Well,
I mean, because I wondered, you don't have a pepperoni recipe.
Yeah, well,
is that well mixed?
It depends. Pepperoni, I mean, there's different styles of pepperoni. I think that we do some chorizo in there.
Yeah.
Which is, I will always say, it's like a Spanish version of a pepperoni.
Oh, okay.
I
feel pepperoni is, no offense to pepperoni, sort of lower.
Good pepperoni.
Lower.
Yeah, I mean, cause we've been trained, we've been conditioned to...
think it's just like, you might as well throw it like a Frisbee.
Exactly. Yeah. If you have really good pepperoni, then it's awesome, Diane.
Okay. I don't think I have had really good pepperoni, perhaps.
We're going to have to change that.
Yeah, please do.
We'll make some one day and get you some. But... yeah, and if you overmix it, you can break down the protein particles too much, and you run the risk of either the meat becoming too warm and like the fat particles coating the meat and preventing the meat from drying. You run the risk of the texture of the meat changing.
Are these things, does it make it inedible or just not excellent?
It can do both. Like, so if the fat becomes too, if the fat smears too much and it coats the protein particle, it basically prevents the meat particle, the protein particle, from drying.
It sort of like
the moisture
encapsulates it.
Yeah, and in that case, it'll make it inedible because it'll
be dangerous.
It'll be rotten.
Okay.
But
and can you tell that as the home person when you cut into it that it's rotten?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can. It'll smell terrible.
Yeah, or look terrible.
Okay.
The problem is you have to wait until it's done most of the time. Which could take weeks.
Okay, it's time for a break.
Okay.
This is Diane Stempel talking about Cured with Charles Wechselbaum. We'll be back in a flash. Bye.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth-generation cheesemakers, combining old-world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious fresh cheese curds, or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirsois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Hi, this is Diane Stemple back on Cutting the Curd with Charles Wechselbaum talking about his book, Cured. Okay, how long did it take to write the book?
It took about, I would say about 4 months probably.
Okay, and when? When and where?
Nights and weekends.
Okay, okay.
And in my apartment.
Yeah.
You know, it was, especially towards the end there, it was a lot. I think for probably like the last 2 months, it was every day of every weekend just sitting at the table in the kitchen with coffee.
Okay. Was it hard to translate the recipes back from business to home?
Yes, it was. I think especially, in business, you know, in our business, you know, the recipes, the formulations are very exact.
Right.
But for a lot of the, a lot of the recipes, the non-salami recipes, like when you're actually cooking at home, I'm very used, in my way of doing it, I do a little of this, little of that.
Right, right.
And, the editor that I was working with, she was very much like, now you've got to measure everything out and everything's got to be exact.
Right.
And so that was really hard for me.
Yeah.
And, just because it was.
Did you have to retest everything? Like making it small at home and test it, or did someone else help you test?
We did a lot of that. Yeah. A lot of testing at home. Mm-hmm. Did some testing in our production facility as well.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that would be a big job, making sure what you said was going to work. I love the font, though. The font on the recipes looks like hand scrawl almost.
Cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's a nice font. Now, did you make the decision? Did you get to...
I had... the publisher that I worked with was really communicative with me and allowed me to have a lot of input in the process, which I was very, very grateful for. The decision was theirs for what fonts were, sort of on the creative side, I guess. So, I would say it was pretty collaborative. But it's not really. I'm not really any good at that.
How do you know?
So I mean, I probably
did you
all right
pick the font?
I didn't pick the font.
Oh, okay.
But I did say it would be cool to have something playful, something like, because one of the sort of tones of hoping to get across in the book was that of like approachability and fun, because one of, in our industry and sort of the wine and cheese and charcuterie nook of the world, we get a bad rap for being snobby,
right,
for being unapproachable, and like if you don't know about this and you're sort of not welcome,
so your font is very approachable.
So the font, the idea was like to give an all our welcome feel to the book.
Yeah,
so.
Good. I think it worked.
Thanks.
Do you have any, what culinary skills would help the new curer? Like, what should you have be good at or already accomplished?
I would say definitely keeping a knife sharp.
Keeping
a knife sharp is because...
Very important.
Very important, because product definition is really important.
Okay, so are knife skills also important?
I would say knife skills are important, but the most important knife skill is the ability to keep your knife sharp.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really important.
I do not have that ability. Well, I have a really a bad set of unsharp knives.
There's a guy, I'm sure, in a truck that rides around.
Yeah, I wish there was. Some, are there still
they
guys?
They still are. Yeah, there's a few of them still left. Otherwise, I could take them to the hardware store.
Okay. I live on the seventh floor, so I can't run down.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.